Welcome to my podcast, Today's Dream, Tomorrow's Reality. My name is Vicki Poole. I'm a master transformational coach and hypnotist specializing in habit change. This podcast is sponsored by the Enlightened Peach, and it's all about embracing our mosaic life. And some of you may ask, what is a mosaic life anyway? Well, it is recognizing that all the pieces of our life, the good, the bad, the indifferent, have all come together to make us who we are. Change any one thing and we are different. With that in mind, I invite you to embrace your perceived imperfections and celebrate who you are. This podcast is unedited and raw, just like life. And I am your host. And today I have a special guest and I will bring him out in just a moment. But before I do that, I want to ask you to do me a solid. I want you to give me a little bit of a response, a comment on this episode. And then not only that, I want you to remember to like, subscribe, and share, because I have amazing guests on my podcast. And the only way their message gets out to a broader audience is with your help. So go ahead, leave a comment, and remember to like, subscribe, and share. So now let's get started. So this gentleman I'm about to bring out, he's a laugh and fun, I will tell you. And I promise I'm going to get your name right. His name is Jesse Blount. And I've actually been on his podcast. It's a podcast for entrepreneurs. And it was just so much fun because it was a little bit different. And I was kind of confused when he first asked me to be on it. I thought, I don't get it. But I'm telling you, it was great. And I've gone back and listened to it and listened to some others. And it's amazing stuff. So he's also known as DJ Scoop. And so I'm going to bring him out and let him introduce himself a little bit more eloquently than I can. All right, there he is.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Right to hear this. I'm going to do this just for you.
Beautiful, beautiful.
That's why they call me DJ Scoop. Whoa. All right.
You can tell by all the stuff behind you, you have quite the sense of humor.
Yeah, I try to do my best. I figure, yeah. You know, if we're going to be in this mix, we might as well laugh it up.
That's right. So what area of the world are you in?
So I'm actually in Missouri.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Georgia. Yeah.
Okay, so cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to, I don't know how your timing goes here. I got to enjoy a little bit of the eclipse. That was awesome.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Amazing. Yes. Unfortunately, I did not. Oh. I was on Zoom calls and stuff all day and I looked up and I thought, oh man, but I'm in the middle of this call and this is really important. So
yeah.
I didn't get to go out and see it in person, but I saw plenty of pictures and my daughter was able to see it. And so she was telling me about it. So I may have missed it in person where my eyes were looking at it, but I got plenty of it afterwards.
Good. That's awesome. At least
yes.
Got that.
Yes. Yes. All right. So I've just got to ask you, for one thing, I know you're an entrepreneur and this podcast that you put together is advice for entrepreneurs from other entrepreneurs, which I thought was so cool. And like I said in the intro, when you first asked me about being on it, I was very confused. Now, what do you mean it just this much time and how do I do that? And so I ended up having to go and watch and I thought, okay, well, this makes sense now. And so I so appreciated getting on there and it was a lot of fun to kind of stretch out and see what kind of advice would I give right now. Yeah. Yeah. So how did that come about that you, I'm assuming you were an entrepreneur for a while. So what brought you to this place with the podcast?
So many moons ago, let's start way back.
Okay.
So I'm a 16-year car salesman, and I've been in the service industry as a server for over 10 years. If you want to go back further than that, when I was in high school, I was in charge of fundraising for the FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America. If you want to go back further than that, when I was 8 or 9 years old, my dad took me to a flea market, gave me $10, and I came back with all kinds of different types of things. I still had $5 left. So I decided to take all this extra stuff that I had and have a yard sale and spread it out. And I made, you know, for at the time, it looked like a bunch of money for an 8, 9-year-old. So yeah. Ever since then, I had these tendencies to want to do sales, and I felt like, oh, you know, this is really awesome. So it's always been in my zone of genius to have some kind of entrepreneurship kind of tendencies. When I was in high school, I would always be in top sales of the lollipop sales or the magazine sales. You know, they turned us into little Amway people.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went from there. I always found different ways to.
Were your parents entrepreneurs?
No.
No,
not at all.
What did they do?
Let's see. My dad made pallets, and my mom, what was she doing? My mom was kind of did all kinds of different types of jobs to keep the family together. That's just what it was.
Yeah.
So yeah. I never really had any type of family that was an entrepreneurship, but it just felt right to me.
Yeah. So we were just born to be in sales, I guess
so.
Well, you didn't have to learn it. You just knew it. So I would assume so. Yeah. So what's your biggest, your best memory experience of being in sales?
My best experience in being sales. Wow. I got so many. I guess it's just, it started when I started selling cars and mm-hmm. being able to make money in one way, shape or form. But it turned into something where it wasn't just about making money anymore. It was helping people find the right fit for them for a product of some kind. Right. So I really got into learning the product and then learning how to match the person with the product if they weren't sure which product was the right for them and their family.
Yeah.
And once I learned how to educate myself that way, it just took off from there where I'm like, okay, if I can teach myself how to do this, what else can I teach myself to do? So I started listening to books. I don't read my books. I listen to my books because I get bored real easy. and just learning, just self-education from then on out.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's probably why you're so good at it. Because the thing is, you know, and you being in sales, you know this, people don't want to be sold at mm-hmm. all. They want to be touched and be held in a place where they're getting their needs met. They're not necessarily being sold. And that's the people that want to buy is the one that you're meeting a need. So that's pretty unique, really, and from my experience of car salesmen.
That's what I say. Usually car salesmen, they're like, I want your money. I want your money. You know, that's probably why my boss didn't like me so much, because I was so much into helping people and not making the money about it. He was like, okay, we're going to have to do something else.
Yeah. So he's probably maybe in the back thinking, so what motivates him if it's not the money, you know?
What really motivates me, especially nowadays, is just having the capability of helping somebody else achieve what they want to achieve, you know, mm-hmm. Not so much as gain money, because if we follow money, it's not going to go right. It's not going to be right. Just getting the money isn't going to help you find your zone of genius. Right. Finding what that one thing is to help somebody else, and the money follows. The money is a byproduct of how well we serve our customers. That's the way you really got to think about. Serve first.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So your podcast is called The Undiscovered Entrepreneur. And so from what you're saying right now, it sounds like you coach entrepreneurs. Am I understanding you right?
So that is part of it. Yes. Part of what I do is coaching. So in my podcast, you're going to get three different types of people. You're going to get the person that comes on who's less than 2 years in their business, where I sit down and have a conversation, find out their struggles, find out their needs, what their accomplishments are, and that kind of thing. And then I ask them what they want to accomplish in the next 6 months. And then 6 months later, I follow up with them again and to see if they've actually accomplished those goals. So we have some kind of storyline going, see how these people, you know, did about what they did. The other kind of you're going
to think. So before you go to the next one, so do you coach them to know what to do in that 6 months? Are you just, you talk to them and then say, I'll check back with you in 6 months and see how you did?
Well, if I have somebody that asks me for that help, then I will actually go there with them. But unless they feel they're comfortable enough with me to ask me those particular mm-hmm. questions. Now, the people that do ask me those questions, that's ask me for help, I have a separate podcast episode for them where it's coaching episodes of them for about 2 hours where I sit down and talk about how do we, you know, we brainstorm with them. I help them see from the outside of the bottle, because you can't see the bottle from the inside. So when you need somebody to help them look on the outside to see their ounce of juice and see what they're made of and things along those lines.
Yeah.
And give them, you know, the help that they need. And then I try to follow up with them a month later and see how they did on those, see if they need any follow up and any kind of thing from that. So you're going to hear that. Then you're also going to hear every Friday, you're going to hear advice from five different entrepreneurs for the business, for the person that's just getting started. Their best advice in less than 5 minutes.
Okay. That's what I did.
That's what you did.
Yes. Yes. I thought that sounds familiar. Yeah. So did you have somebody when you were beginning your entrepreneurial journey that did that for you? What you're doing for people?
At first, no. And I think that's one of the main reasons why I do what I do, is because I never really had that person to give me advice, to give me the direction. I did run into, in my all my research or anything, I ran into a gentleman named Pat Flynn, who I listened to his podcast from episode zero. He's at episode 770 right now. So I've listened to every single one of his episodes.
What's the name of his podcast?
It's called the Smart Passive Income Podcast.
Ooh, I want to check that one out. And Smart Passive.
Wait between his podcast and his teachings on YouTube, this is where I'm at. And everything that I learned was for free because I learned it through the podcast and the YouTube. And that's
how he has a YouTube channel too.
Yeah, he has a YouTube channel too. But that's how I learned how to podcast. That's how I learned the processes. And that's how I learned, got most of my experiences, was from his teachings and the books that he wrote.
Okay.
So technically, you know, he's not a person I could shake his hand and say, "Hey, thank you very much." But at the same time, he was the person that reached out and inspired me to be that, also the person that reaches out to somebody to help them along, and also the person that I never got when I was starting out. So
right. It's just kind of calling. So have you asked him to be a guest on your podcast?
I'm almost there. I'm almost there. That is one of my goals.
Yeah.
But I have interviewed several of his cohorts, a couple of people that are in his mastermind I've interviewed. So I'm getting there. I'm kind of building up to it. But that's definitely one of my goals.
Well, I will say, you know, the interesting thing was I reached out to somebody, an author, not too long ago to see if she would be on my podcast. And I thought, there's probably no way, right? And she said, yes. So then after that happened, it was like, well, who else can I ask, you know? So then I'm reaching out to people that, like, I had a lady on my podcast yesterday that is somebody that I've been following on YouTube forever. And it was like, you know, there's probably no way. And I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen? And I reached out to her and she said yes. So I've been really surprised. Now, there are a few people that don't respond and that kind of thing. And I think that's okay. You know, no big deal. But it's really impressive. So I can't wait to hear when you reach out to see what happens, because especially if you're already in the inner circle kind of thing, you know, you got your foot in the door and you're just getting in there, right?
Well, that's just it. We can't be afraid to ask that question, because you never know when you actually get somebody that says yes, or, you know, maybe not this, but that, or something along that, something positive. Yeah. I mean, like you said, the worst they could say is, no, okay, well, I'm no worse off than I am right now.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to have to really fear that. That's something I always talk about my podcast too, is getting over these different types of fears. It's really big in my podcast.
Yeah. Cause you know, the thing to me is that, especially long time ago, if somebody said no to me, I thought they were saying, you're not a good person. You're not doing anything valuable and I don't like you. That's what I thought that no meant to me, you know? And it took a while of getting to a place where no just means they're just not interested. It doesn't fit with their time schedule right now, or maybe it means not today, but maybe next week, you know? And so I gave it a different kind of meaning, because that just felt better, right?
Yeah, no, sometimes you have to take what it is or what you think it might be. Yeah. And give it another look. Look at it from a different angle. Look at it. Go look at it this way. Say, well, maybe it's this, until you find that one thing that makes you comfortable. Now, me being a car salesman, I mean, rejection was just part of the game. Right. So I really had to learn how to take rejection. And the way I thought about it was, no doesn't always mean no. No sometimes means not yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's the way I started thinking about it selling cars. Later on, of course, I had some people that said no to me, especially when I was just getting started because I had no audience, no nothing. Why would they take the time? But I just kept going. I kept, you know, pushing and just kept going anyway. Now I'm going on almost 3 years now on my podcast. I have almost 120 episodes. And I'm just going to keep going until I fall over. Really, I love this so much.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I do too. And what's funny is I thought about doing a podcast for a very long time, but it seemed like it was sounded so hard and difficult to do. And I actually, what I did was I didn't know about the podcast guy that you were watching, or I might have got it before then. But there was a woman on Facebook called Stacey Lauren, and she had the Do the Thing formula. And so she had a Do the Thing podcast challenge. And I thought, okay. So I got on the podcast challenge, and after like 5 days, I had my podcast set up. And then she gave me a challenge. I asked her, I said, will you be a guest on my podcast? And she said, well, once you get 20 episodes in, then I'll be a guest. So I thought, okay. So I worked really hard to get those 20 episodes in. So then when I reached out to her and said, okay, I've got my 20 episodes in, will you be my guest? And she laughed and she said, I don't know why I even said that. She said, that's not really a criteria, but okay, good. You got 20 episodes in, I'm game. So it was just funny. So when you first started your podcast, did you have like a goal in mind then, or is it something that's morphed a little along the way?
It's morphed a little along the way, but the one thing that kept me going is something that my son said when he was 6 years old. He's 17 now. Mm-hmm. And I used it as my tagline. I can, I am, I will, and I'm doing it today. And it's just that saying when he said he was having a rough time with homework. And he was trying to motivate himself. And he said that. And it was so profound to have that come out of such a young
child.
Out of a six-year-old.
Wow.
So we started posting it all over the walls and everything.
I bet.
And now he's 17. He graduated high school 6 months early. And now he's going to college to do culinary. And the whole time he's carrying this thing with him. So it was that really that motivated me to keep going, to keep moving on. But the main part of the whole thing was to start something, no matter how small, no matter how trivial, whether it's to talk to somebody, whether it's to read a book about the thing that you want to learn about, like I talked about earlier, anything just to get your foot across the start line. That's another thing that I always talk about is getting across the start line. Because once you get started, it's like little snowflakes, right? Then you get those snowflakes and you get enough of those snowflakes, you make a little ball. And then when you have a little snowball like this, you either start throwing at each other or you make a snowman, one of the two, depending on how you think things go. But it's those things that those little
movements. You can tell you in the north with the snowflake reference.
Yeah, true.
I wouldn't use that in Georgia.
We'll have to think of something else for Georgia, but yes.
Well, I love that. And I really love the your son at 6 years old already having that mentality to be able to motivate himself. And in that same frame is motivating you guys, right? That's pretty cool. Yeah. So what do you think? He was watching you with all the things that you were doing and then he kind of grasped that? Or was he like you and he was a prodigy on this thing?
So he was always a lot smarter than he should have been for his age, 100%. By the time he was in high school, he was playing 5 different musical instruments. He was doing calculus. He's always had it. He has his mom's brain, not mine. I can tell you that right now.
An old soul.
Maybe, yeah, who knows? You know, but the thing is, it's just something stirred him to motivate himself to get to the next point he needed to get to. And that's where the I can, I am, I will. But then he said, I'm doing it today. And that when he finished with that, I realized that if we don't do something now, we tend to forget about it or something else gets in the way where we push it aside when we really should have started doing it now. We should have started doing it today.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I've used that as a motivation. Now, old me, I have an old me,
No, okay, we all do.
Right. where I would put things off and then just wish, I wish I would have started now. I wish I would have started 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Or whatever, wherever it is. I wish I would have started, just like you said earlier, I wish I would have started the podcast earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having that regret, do it now. So you could see what comes out of it. So you could see what's the next thing that you're going to go to that you wouldn't have if you didn't start it.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it that saying the best time to start something is right now?
So this is one of my favorites. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time to plant a tree is today.
That's it. That's it. See, I knew there was something there. It was like, I knew I was missing something, but it was like, that's the only part I could remember.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing to me is like, for one of the things that I tell my clients is that all we need is a 1% change every day. Because most of the time, one of the things that holds us back is that we think we have to make a leap from here to there. And we don't get all the stuff in between that really makes us stronger and helps us learn to be better at that thing, right? So it's like realizing that, you know, 1% is not really much, but man, oh man, compounded over time, it's exponential growth, right? And so it's really, I think a lot of people, especially when they're watching people on social media and everything, it's like they want to make the leap to where that person is. And they might have been doing it for 10 or 15 years, you know? And so I think that what you were just saying is perfect, because a lot of people don't start at all because they feel like, well, I couldn't do that. But of course they can't. They don't have the 10 or 15 years experience to be able to make that happen. And another story that comes to my mind, and I was just sharing this with somebody this morning or yesterday, I can't even remember, but there's a story about Michael Jackson being in his hotel room, and he wakes up in the middle of the night and he calls his manager and he says, hey, this is the show I'm wanting to do. And he starts telling him all this stuff. And he says, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Can this not wait? And he said, no, Prince is right down the hall. And if I don't act on this, he's going to get the idea and he'll run with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes we have to remember that when we get some kind of amazing idea, at least put it down on paper, do some little action toward that, like what you were just saying, because then you've taken ownership of it. It's yours then. Because I don't know how many times in my life I've thought, oh, if this would just work this way, it would be so good. And I don't do anything. And then later on, somebody has invented that thing that has made life so much simpler. And I think, but I thought of that, I just didn't do anything.
That's just it. And that's really why we have to take action right away. It's because it's just neat when it needs to be done. What I mean, I don't know how else you could really even put it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned things. 1% intervals. I love that. If you'll see a lot of sports teams will do the same thing too, where they'll get to a point where they can't get any better, but until they realize starting, okay, what if we made you 1% better at throwing free throws or kicking the ball? Just 1%. All those things compound, just make a better team. Cycling's team, football teams, you'll see them all do that, where they make these, even right down to the shorts they're wearing.
Yeah.
The turkey warm, so it works out better. You know, whatever it is, it can be, and make that 1% difference that makes you a better team.
Yeah, it's amazing, because most of the time we don't even appreciate the little 1% because we don't feel like it moved the needle enough. Don't you agree?
Right. You get enough 1%.
Yeah.
That needle starts moving, right?
That's right. That's right.
And you make another great point, too. We really can't compare ourselves to these people that have been doing it for 10 or 15 years. Because you know you're not going to do it because you haven't already had that 10 or 15 years experience. Plus, they're a whole different person. They're not you. So they're going to have a whole different set of experiences that you're going to have. So why would you compare yourself to these people? Instead, what you need to do is compare yourself to yourself. Mm-hmm. Compare yourself to yourself a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. Take a look at what you've accomplished up to that point, and it will give you the guidelines how you can succeed further on in your lifetime.
Perfect. You know, that to kind of expand on that thought, one of the things that I do with my group on Facebook is every day I go in and I do an affirmation and a journal prompt. Okay. And I go in live and then there's people on there and they're talking and stuff. But what I tell them to do is to have a journal and to write down the journal and answer the questions, put the date on it and everything. Because if you're making a 1% change every day, then today you've changed, but tomorrow that's your new normal. So when you look at that, it doesn't look like you did anything. And so in 6 months, they can come back and look and see how much they've changed, but you can't tell for a while that you've made this change, especially if you're doing it every day and it becomes your new normal, you just don't notice it. And so one of the things that made me really realize that a lot was quite a few years ago, I was quite heavy and I lost the weight and everything, right? Well, now I've been in this body, this size for quite a few years. And so I forget how far I've come until I see a picture or I see something I wrote in a journal and stuff. And so if we don't have a way to measure where we've come from, we totally negate the path that we've taken that's created who we are.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because like, I actually keep an old driver's license that I've had in,
do you really?
Back in Arizona. And that was when I was at my heaviest. I was 273 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have that driver's license, that old driver's license in my wallet that I carry with me all the time. Every once in a while, I'll pull that thing out and goes, that doesn't even look like me anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is going to sound so silly, but one of the biggest milestones when I was working on getting the weight off and everything is there was one day I looked at my license and I said, oh my God, I finally weigh exactly what it says on my license.
This is real now.
Because the picture never reflected the real weight because I never changed it. I just changed the picture, but that was just such a surreal moment, you know?
Well, it's those moments that we got to take in and realize the progress that we've made.
Yeah. Yeah. So when was it that you were so heavy?
Oh, geez. It was probably about 10 years ago.
About 10 years ago?
Yeah.
So what changed?
What changed? Okay. What changed? I think the biggest change was realizing, number one, I had to feed my brain the right food. I know it sounds a little weird at first, but I found like out that my family has a history of Alzheimer's, and realizing that I have to take care of my brain so that doesn't happen to me. Right.
Gotcha.
So I started eating fruits that had skins on them. If you eat fruits with skins on them, it increases your gray matter in your brain, which gives you basically your synapses. This is going to get a little technical. Sorry. Gives your synapses a clean road to go on. So you have your ideas better. You comes faster. You can make decisions faster and that kind of thing. Then at the same time, I had to work on my gut health. Because the combination of those two things, the rest of your body will follow.
Right.
So I started
working on the gut health right now. So keep going.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So for gut health, I would start drinking, instead of drinking sodas or anything along those lines, the sugary drinks, I would drink kombucha.
I'm making a homemade kombucha right now. It's in the cooler thing.
Oh, there you go.
It's working. It's cooking.
Go ahead. What that'll do for you is actually increases the good bacteria in your stomach. So when you do eat, it digests things properly and gets the nutrients to the rest of your body that needs to be there. So that's then I started eating Greek yogurt instead of regular yogurt. A lot less sugar, a lot better proteins, and a lot better good bacteria for your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was doing that, I work two full-time jobs on top of entrepreneur coaching, on top of my podcast, on top of editing for another podcast. But between the two jobs, so I work at a hospital and I'm a trash guy, basically. So nobody bothers me. But between that and my serving job, because at night I'm a server, I walk over 30,000 steps a day. So because of that, and then the decrease in the calorie intake I was doing because I changed what I was eating,
mm-hmm.
the weight just dropped right off.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, well, you know, for me, it wasn't that simple. When I decided, it was because I had gained the weight once again and gotten bigger than I ever had been. Mm-hmm. And so I finally said, you know, I am so sick of this crap. I've either got to make peace with being fat or I got to figure out a way to do something about it. And that's when I became a health coach, because it was like, I don't want to hire a coach. If I spend this amount of money on coaching, I'll do it. And because I knew that from the things I had done in the past, that if it didn't cost me enough money, I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And then I expanded on that, became a life coach and a transformational coach and then a hypnotist and all that stuff. But it was all because it was like I was so sick of how I felt in my body and how my body looked, and, you know, and I felt like a failure and all those different things, that it was like, okay, either be at peace with it or change it. And mm-hmm. so that's when I made a change, but it didn't happen right away. You know, it was a slow progress for me, but I admire your tenacity with taking care of all that stuff. And I don't know how fast it happened for you, because you said it kind of fell off. Mine didn't fall. It went out yelling and screaming the whole way, because it kept trying to get me back to the old me. But I was working at it really diligently and learning and growing. And as I learned and grew, I became so much more focused on me and what I needed, you know. And I think that's what happens, that creates the changes for us when we finally get to a place where, you know, I got to do something. That's when we will hire the coach, or we'll start doing something and start learning something new, going to the podcast or reading a book and all of those things. But the best thing to me is when we get to this place where we want someone, because as coaches, I feel like as coaches, we're up above people looking down, and we're saying, okay, I can see that these are the roads you've been taking, but if you'd gone over here, it would have been so much easier. So let me help you. And so I think when you finally get to a place where you're ready to have somebody help you get there and you hire a coach, oh, that's beautiful, because it shortens your time of getting to your destiny, because they can see your obstacles in the way and see you, because most of us, we revert back to our old behaviors over and over again. I can attest to that one. And so it is amazing to be able to get the help from someone and let them kind of pull us along, push us when we need it, and stop us in our tracks when we need that too.
Yeah. I mean, hiring a coach is going to give you a lot of different aspects of what you really need to accomplish. You're actually feeding off of their experience, because they've mm-hmm. had that experience that you didn't. So you can use that as a shortcut. I don't want to call it shortcut, but as a shortcut to be able to get to where you want to be. And the other thing,
the expressway. There you go. There you go.
The other thing too is a coach will hold you accountable for what you do. And when somebody holds you accountable, you're a lot more likely to accomplish what you need to accomplish, because you have to go back to that person later and say, hey, this is what I did do, and this is what I didn't do. Okay, well, why didn't you do that? Now you're saying things out loud to this person. And that's another thing too. It's different when you say it in your head. Mm-hmm. When you say it in your head, that's one thing, but then you have your internal ego that's always vying for its job, right? And you have that internal monologue going with yourself. Well, is this good? Is this bad? Whatever. But when you verbalize it to somebody, now you hear yourself thinking. You're not just thinking it. You hear yourself. You're using different senses of your body to be able to produce what it is that you're trying to accomplish. Sometimes you answer your own question.
Yeah, most of the time, right?
Yeah. I've done it so many times where I just say, blah, 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 blah. Oh, wait a minute. You know? I just gave myself my own answer, and it's only because I was able to verbalize it out for it to click in my head.
Right, right.
And yeah, that's what a coach does for us.
Yeah, because most of the time, I think as a coach, we're not giving people the answers. We're just helping them to pull it out of themselves and help them implement it. Because most people deep down know what to do. They just don't do it. And so they have to have somebody that to me that holds them accountable, but also helps them see the value in the change and helps them make the steps that it takes. Because most of the time left to on our own, we take so many steps and then we go back and then so many steps and then we go back. And so the coach keeps us from doing all that backsliding stuff. Don't you agree? Well,
they'll hold your back and say, move forward.
Yeah,
we're going to catch you when you start sliding back, but then they push us forward to the the next thing where we need to do. Yeah. And, you know, us as coaches, because we are coaches, we try to stay away from advice. That's the one thing too. We want you to come up with your own ideas, because you're going to be more likely to implement your own ideas if they come with you. We try to stay away from the advice monster. Right? Mm-hmm. We want to stay away from the advice monster. We want you to give yourself the advice, but us being the ones to ask the question so you can give yourself the advice. Yeah. And that's a lot more satisfying than me telling you what to do.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, one of the things that used to drive me crazy when I was first starting coaching is because we got coached. You know, we had coaches that coached us, and then we learned how to coach others. But I would get so aggravated sometimes because the coach would say, well, what do you think you should do in this scenario? And I'd say, well, I don't know. And I'd say, well, if you did know, what would it be? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, well, wait a minute, let me think. And sure enough, there would be something that would come to my mind that I hadn't thought of before, because they said, if you did know, what would it be? All of a sudden it was like, well, I don't know, maybe this is it. And, you know, and it's really interesting to think that it was there. I just couldn't pull it out, but they were able to pull it out of me. And so to me, that's one of the beauties of having a coach, is because we have all this knowledge within us and we just don't know how to get it out so that we can utilize it.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, what's funny is hearing a question from somebody else, even if it's the same question, because you could talk to my wife about this, hearing it from a different voice and a different perspective sometimes makes it click. Yeah. Like there's times where I've had somebody talk to me and they say something my wife's been telling me for years, but I go,
that's what happens with your kids. You know, I don't know how many times you tell your kids something and it's like they just don't pay attention, or it's like whatever, but then somebody else says it and they'll say, do you know what they told me? And I'm thinking, haven't I been saying that? But you don't hear it, you know.
It's funny how that works out sometimes.
It is.
I wish for the better.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wonder sometimes if it's not that, you know, the whole thing that they say that you have to hear something, what is it? 60, 70 times. I don't remember what the number is before it actually clicks in your head. And so then you think that it's something you've just learned, but it's been said so many times, but it just kind of kept either going up and over, or, you know, just kind of went through.
Or if you're like some of these kids, they just kind of dodge it out of the way because they don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I got to ask you, so how long have you been so fascinated with Scooby-Doo?
Oh, for many, many years. Yeah.
Was it back when you were really little?
So that was one of my favorite cartoon characters growing up. But I never knew how much I loved it until I accidentally did the Scooby-Doo laugh with my regular laugh. So the Scooby-Doo laugh that I do is a duration of my regular laugh. Okay. So I was in a conversation with a friend of mine and they said something really silly and I laughed my regular laugh and they go, you know that stupid Scooby-Doo laugh of yours? And I was like, wait a minute. Then I went, and ever since then, it's just, you know, 30 years later, I'm doing the same thing, you know, just doing the voice. Then I realized that I can do other cartoon voices.
Oh, and you really? What do you do?
Oh, yeah. Who's your pal? Hey, rookie, watch me pull a rabbit out of my head. But, you know, only some of us will know what that one's about.
Yeah.
But voices has always been kind of one of my things I always love. I even, like, and a couple other podcasts, I voiced some characters in other podcasts, too. Just, you know, because I think it's cool. Why not?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But, sounds fun. I don't have any of that.
Yeah, well. You know, it's not easy being green, you know,
yeah,
just, yeah. just it's something that's always fascinated me, being able to, I've always wanted to be a Jim Henson Muppeteer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just one of those things like, oh, anyway. So it's one of those kid dreams that stuck with me for the rest of my life.
Well, maybe you should do that.
I want to. I really, really do. I think if I ever get to the point where I can actually have some serious time to be able to work on it for myself and get to that point, I will. But right now I'm doing this. This is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so. I've got, after we get off here, I've got a Facebook group that I want to tell you about that I think would be really beneficial for you with this idea. Oh, so, okay. Yeah. So help me remember when we get finished, I'll share that with you and you can check it out. But yeah, it would be really cool for you, I think.
Well, thank you.
My pleasure. So what kind of response do you get from people when you're doing all of your Scooby-Doo stuff and your voices and things? Do they laugh and have fun with you? Do you ever have the people that say, well, be serious, guy?
If it's a be serious guy, then I don't want him around me. That's just it, you know?
Yes.
The thing is, your vibe attracts your tribe. Right.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get somebody that's going to have a personality and want to laugh and have a good time, those are the people that I want around me. If they're going to be stuffy Mr. Serious, like, oh, I'm all business and nothing else, you're no fun to me. Why would I want to be around somebody that's that far off from what my normal personality is? So I got the piano tie on, right? And then my logo has my wrong finger. My logo here has the piano tie. This guy here, my daughter made this for me. This is Scooby-Doo as a pug.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I couldn't do Scooby-Doo's likeness because Warner Brother owns Scooby.
Yeah.
So my son's favorite dog was a pug. So I said, hey, let's turn Scooby-Doo into a pug. And she made that for, I'm all backwards. Made this thing for me. And
so your daughter's an artist?
My daughter's an animator.
Is she really?
Yeah. So
how old is she? Is she the baby or is your son?
She's 28.
Okay. So your son's the youngest then.
Well, okay. So I have an older son who's 32. He's a blacksmith.
Okay.
My daughter, who's 28, she does animation and she teaches kids pottery.
Okay.
And she has two daughters. And then my youngest is the one I was telling you about, the 17-year-old that was really smart.
Yeah.
They're all really smart, but none of them.
Yeah, and very creative. Very creative people. Yeah.
And then I don't know if this will work for you or not.
Well, you can see where they get their creativity from. You may say they get the brains from their mom, but still.
Well, they got the personality from me. I can tell you that right now. All three of my kids, if all three of us, all four of us got together, it's like a huge party between the four of us because we are all just yucking it up all night. So,
well, see, it makes me realize how boring some of our family stuff is. We have fun, we laugh and joke, but there's not like that kind of thing, you know. And it's like I've always been envious of those families that a lot of people play musical instruments and they sit around and play music and sing and stuff. And I think our family doesn't do that.
But there's always a family dynamic that will bring you all together in one way, shape, or form. Doesn't always have to be music. Sometimes it's just a certain subject just I like to talk about, or just, you know, anything really. And that's the beautiful thing about families is there's always that camaraderie between each other.
Yeah. Well, we do enjoy getting together. And, you know, I have two sisters and a brother. Mm. And there's a big difference. Like my older sister's 2 years older than me, but then it's 9 years later that my younger sister showed up. And then 2 years after that was when my brother showed up. So it's like two different families, but we all get along really well. We may not all spend a hell of a lot of time together because, you know, things get busy, but we all live very relatively close to each other. The furthest one away is an hour. And my mother is still alive and she's an hour away. And we've got a few nieces that have moved a little further away. But for the most part, you know, for like big holidays like Easter and Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff, we all get together in the same house and, you know, and it's fun and a lot of talking, but you know, it's just, it's not, there's not the music thing and there's not like the comedy thing. And that to me is like, you know, I'd like to have one person come in the family that did that, you know, so I'm single. Who knows? Maybe at one point I'll find somebody that's a comedian or a musician.
That's where my thing is a little bit different because I'm in Missouri. My kids are in Arizona and then the rest of my family live out in California.
Oh, wow.
So we're really spread out a little bit, but thanks to technology and things like what we're doing here, I actually could see my granddaughters. I could see my kids and talk to them whenever I want to and that kind of thing. I don't know where I would be without being able to at least see their face, but it makes it really hard to hug a screen.
Yeah, you know? It does. But you do what you can, right? Right. And you know, to think about it, I remember many years ago, I had a client that she did not get to see her grandchildren. Like one of them was born and I don't remember, it was almost a year old before she got to see it because that they were military or whatever, mm-hmm. but they couldn't get to them, you know, and we didn't have this technology then. And so now that is a beautiful thing. It bridges that gap of time and space and everything, you know, so it is amazing that we have it, although it's not the same as the personal thing, but to see someone that you can actually see them grow and you actually have can connect an amazing communication, a bond just over this space, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, even just in my podcast alone, I've talked to people in the UK, I've talked to people in Pakistan, I've talked to people all in Canada, all across the world. Because I'm able to do this with them, you know. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd be, you know, when I was younger, that was just, you know, it was neighborhood and that's it, right?
So. Yeah, that's right. And it was your little neighborhood, not mm-hmm. the neighborhood next door.
Right, yeah, because you'd have to get on your bike and mom would only let you go so far.
That's right. Well, you know, I love the podcast because, you know, you can reach so many different people that you never would have met otherwise. And so the same for you and I never would have met you without the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I had a guest on yesterday that it makes you think about time and how it's the construct of time is so strange because we were on Zoom together and she was in Australia. So it was the next day for her. Right. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, I just can't believe it. You're in the future. And she said, I know. So she was telling me about, she made a trip to the US to do something. And she said, when she got here before she ever left the time. So it was like, she said, it was just so bizarre to think about it that when she looked at the clock, she said, wow, it's almost 2 hours before I would even have left there. And so it's just mind boggling the way the time thing works. It blows my mind anyway. Sometimes I feel like, you know, why do we follow this time rule? But I guess we have to be able to schedule things for goodness sakes, because we couldn't get on there at the same time with her being in Australia because it would be the next day. She would be on the wrong day. You know, it's just interesting to me to how all that works out. And it gets so bizarre. Like, luckily she works with a lot of people in the US because when I told her my time zone and everything, I was trying to calculate on the thing, you know, what the time is. And I was getting so confused. And she said, okay, she said, you do Monday at this time, and then it'll be Tuesday this time for me. I said, yes.
Yeah. Somebody else figured out this point. I have software to figure that out for me now. Yeah.
My brain. I Googled it and it still kept coming up with these weird things. And I thought, that can't be right. But it could have just been my perception, you know, that can't be right. So then I just left it up to her. You tell me what time I'm supposed to show up and I'll be there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we're getting close to time. But before we get off here, I know we've just kind of gone all over the place, but I like to say that my podcast is just a conversation. So it's almost like we sit down in the living room, we have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and we just have a conversation getting to know each other. And that's what this, why I love doing this, right? And so if there's something that I didn't think to ask you that you want to share, you know, you're more than welcome to share now, or if there's nothing like that, if there's some last thoughts that you want to leave someone, then please do.
You know, what's funny is one of my questions in my podcast, and it's one of the consequences I always ask is, what's the one question you wish I would have asked you, but didn't?
Ah, okay.
So it's so funny because you're the second person today to ask me that question.
For real? Okay. Yeah. Well, cool. Like, it must mean you need to answer it.
I don't know. if you're looking to start an entrepreneur adventure, okay, the first thing I would do is pick up a book called The Big Leap.
Mm-hmm. Okay? I've got that right
here. She's going to pull it out right there, ladies and gentlemen. There it is. Yes. That book changed my life. It changed who I was because I realized that the ceiling of love and abundance for myself was so low. And no matter what I did and how hard I tried, I would always sabotage myself to get back to that low part. No matter how high I ended up, I always ended up in that low part because I would always self-sabotage myself. Once I actually just even learned about how I could raise that ceiling, my whole life changed. So one of the first things I would do was pick up that book, The Big Leap, and read that or listen to it like I did. And
I didn't listen to it. I read it. I have the written word, right?
And then find somebody to not copy, but get inspiration from.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's Pat Flynn, like I talked about earlier. Sometimes it's a coach that you can hire or even just talk to for 10 minutes. Something to inspire yourself, something to move yourself forward, and then find your zone of genius. That's where everything lies. And whatever you do, find your zone of genius. If you want help finding your zone of genius, you already read the book, or you could listen to my episode 25, where I talk about the four questions to find your zone of genius. Ha! Okay. So
beautiful, beautiful. Okay. Well, I will tell everybody that's watching or listening that when I put this episode out, I will have a description in the comments that will have all the links to be able to talk to Jesse, figure out exactly what you need, what you want from him. I'll even put a link in there to the book so that you can reference that. And and I'll put links to your podcast, whatever you want to share with them, you know, you let me know and we'll have it there. So it'll be an actual link. So all you'll have to do is go into the comments and just click on it and just body, body, boom, there you go. You're right there where you need to be. So with that said, I want to thank you so much for being here and being so fun, because this has been a lot of fun to explore all this stuff with you. And I hope I haven't interrupted too many times. That tends to be my thing I do. All of a sudden an idea comes, wait a minute, you know. But I will leave everybody with this phrase, this, what is it? A quote.
This quote.
Yes. There you go. Okay. I'll leave you with this quote. The best way to predict the future is create it. What are you creating? And with that, mwah.